So I made a little quiz for you, Anna. So I'm hoping you can try and work out what might be making these sounds. Fish, crab, or human?
Okay, I'll do my best.
Okay, first sound.
Today on the Conversation Weekly.
Oh, it's so hard to tell. I'm guessing a kind of fish, but I could also imagine it being a crab smashing its claw against something, maybe.
We're speaking with Izzy Key, a scientist who spends her time snorkeling off the coast of Scotland, listening to the sounds of fish.
Your instincts were right, it's a fish. That's actually an Atlantic cod. Good start, fish.
Here's Izzy quizzing my colleague, Anna Turns. Izzy's been collecting these sounds to measure the health of seagrass habitats.
Next sound.
I'm going to say a mooring buoy.
Honestly, it does sound like a mooring buoy, but no, that's actually a shore crab feeding. So that's one of the most common species of crab we have in the UK. When it's feeding, it makes that sound.
Besides being quite entertaining to listen to, these gurgles and snaps are the first step towards developing AI tools that can help us better understand the soundscape of the sea and potentially improve the health of underwater habitats. I'm Gemma Ware, and this is The Conversation Weekly, the world explained by experts. Helping us tell the story today is the senior environment editor at The Conversation in the UK, Anna Turns. Hi, Anna. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Gemma. Thanks for having me.
So, Anna, the story we're hearing today came about because of something you told me that you'd been seeing and noticing in Devon on the south coast of England where you live. What did you notice?
So I often swim in the sea in the sort of shallow coastal waters around Devon, and I really started noticing differences in the seagrass habitats where I swim. So some places are very sandy and some places have got really amazing seagrass 3D habitats growing on the seabed. And I started noticing lots of creatures kind of swimming there. And I was really curious about what was going on in terms of the importance of this seagrass and how in different places it was thriving and in different places it perhaps wasn't so much because boats were anchoring and that sort of thing.
So when you swim over the top of this seagrass meadow, what does it feel like?
So whenever I swim with my head down, I'm sort of doing front crawl, and I really love the fact that I'm completely immersed in that marine environment, and it sounds really, really different. There's a very different quality when you're underneath the water compared to being on land and being surrounded by air. And I started hearing different, it's really hard to describe, kind of different sort of swishing sounds. Some of it was my breathing, some of it was my movement, but some of it was clinking of mooring chains in the distance or waves moving underneath the water and things like that. And I'm also super conscious of my connection with natural sound as well. So a couple of years ago, I started losing some of my hearing, and I'm just very appreciative of the fact that I can hear natural things. And I think when I'm swimming, because I'm maybe in a more mindful headspace, I really notice the quality of sound and the changes in sound as well. And it also struck me that marine creatures use sound as a form of communication. So I was just really interested in this idea of acoustic pollution, like how things are different in seagrass, and the sort of diversity of sound, I suppose, underwater.
So in your job at The Conversation, you've got a great opportunity to go out and find researchers who might be able to answer these questions you had as you were swimming along. How did you find Izzy Key and her research?
It was quite serendipitous, actually. So I've had this kind of thought process for quite a while because I swim regularly. It's always at the back of my mind. And I came across Izzy's work on Twitter, actually. And when I saw it, I was immediately really fascinated. She is a researcher studying seagrass habitats. She's working on her PhD at the moment at the University of Edinburgh in Scotland as a marine ecologist. And as part of her PhD work, she's heading out into seagrass meadows off the coast of Scotland and listening to the sounds of wildlife and the sounds of those habitats and trying to distinguish what some of those sounds were. So I was just really intrigued by her research and wanted to connect with her and find out more.
And you did for this episode, so we're going to hear that conversation now.
Yes, and I started out by asking her, why study seagrass?
I mean, I'm not one of those people who just fell in love with seagrass at first sight when they were five, but seagrass really caught my attention because it's one of those marine ecosystems which is one of the major ones in the ocean, but hardly anyone has really heard about it. but it's really declined in the UK. So we've lost at least 40% of our seagrass cover, possibly up to 90% of historical levels. With that, it's going to have a huge impact on the creatures that live in it, and that's going to have ricochet effects right up the food chain. So I think for me, I really care about marine life as a whole, and I see protecting and restoring seagrass as one really key part of restoring marine life.
So before we go any further, what actually is seagrass?
Seagrass is a marine plant. It's different to seaweed, which I think can be a bit confusing. Seaweed is actually a type of algae, whereas seagrass is related to land plants. It forms meadows just like we get meadows on land. So it's got flowers, it's got seeds and pollen, and it has roots that grow underground.
Izzy's ongoing research, which is still unpublished, looks at how seagrass meadows sound different depending on the biodiversity of species that live there.
A really healthy seagrass meadow is going to be home to lots of creatures. So fish, crabs and other animals, and lots of those animals will be making sound, either accidentally as they're just walking around or deliberately because they want to communicate with each other. So we'd expect that if we hear more different types of sound, and that might mean there are more animals in the seagrass and potentially a more biodiverse and healthy seagrass meadow.
So Izzy set out to start recording coastal seagrass habitats along the west coast of Scotland.
The Scottish coast is beautiful. You have quite jagged rocks and often you have white sand, turquoise water if it's a really sunny day, so it can look really stunning. Generally, I'm snorkeling, so I'll snorkel around and dive down to do things on the seabed. And then I usually have a friend or a colleague with me on a paddleboard or in a kayak, and they do the navigating and some carrying of equipment and stuff. The water is quite chilly. It's about 12 to 15 degrees C in the summer, but I have a really thick wetsuit. It's definitely quite intense. You really have to limit how much time you're in the water. And I always have someone helping me in the field. This is a massive team effort.
Izzy and the team she works with are among the first ecologists to do this sort of audio research in a seagrass habitat, partly because the technology they use for recording was so expensive even just a few years ago.
I take these diddy little microphones called audio moths, which are actually designed to listen to bats on land, but they've been recently developed to have underwater cases. And this has really revolutionised underwater sound science because these are really nice and cheap. So you used to have to spend thousands and thousands of pounds on buying hydrophones, and now you can just get a cheap little recorder, which has really opened up this field to lots of people.
These microphones are so small, they can fit in the palm of your hand. And Izzy and her team use them to monitor the sound in three different seagrass meadows, which are anywhere between 1 to 7 metres deep. So at the moment, you're studying seagrass meadows in Scotland in the UK. It's summertime in the Northern Hemisphere here right now. What is the seagrass doing at the moment?
So now is a really busy time in seagrass land. It's warm, so there'll be sea snails feeding on algae. There'll be juvenile fish feeding on zooplankton. Crabs might be out defending their territories and having a fight. And there'll be birds and seals, which are hunting for fish and crabs to feed their own young. So a really bustling time of year. And of course, the seagrass will be flowering and there'll be pollen moving around either through the water column or invertebrates might move it around in some cases.
And what sort of things do you hear?
So we hear fish. So they make kind of grunting noises or burping or purring noises, which are quite low pitched. They use about the same vocal range of human speaking. Or like more around a man's tone of voice. And then I heard a lot of sounds which I think are due to crabs. It's really hard to say everything for sure, but they make a more kind of metallic-y sort of zzz kind of sound. And then occasionally you've got a dolphin coming through. And then you also have wave sounds or just like general water movement. Occasionally you might have a boat or some like chinking of chains from a buoy.
On top of these human-made noises, Izzy also discovered an unexpected source of sound, the seagrass itself.
I got this sound which I wasn't really expecting, or wasn't expecting it to be so loud. So I got lots of popping noises, which I think is due to photosynthesis. And they were becoming louder during the day. So as the sun is out and it's warmer, plants are photosynthesizing more, and I was getting much more of this popping sound. And that was actually surprisingly loud. It is known that plants underwater, so seagrass and algae, make bubbles. So as they photosynthesize, bits of oxygen collect on their surface, and as that moves off the surface, that makes a popping sound. But it can be quite difficult because that popping sound can mask the fish sounds you're trying to hear, which are actually quite quiet. So it can be easier to study the fish sounds at night because there isn't as much photosynthesis getting in the way.
It seems that this sound doesn't bother the marine life. And in fact, this may be part of the attraction for them. Izzy explains that the seagrass shields its inhabitants from predators.
So seagrass actually absorbs sound energy as it hits it. And it's been shown that that can protect fish from dolphins that use echolocation to navigate towards their prey. So the clicks of dolphins don't penetrate seagrass very well. So fish are actually safer in seagrass, which is really cool.
So they can actually hide amongst the fronds,
exactly,
basically.
Yeah.
Wow.
And you'd think, well, obviously it's visual protection, but you forget that it's actually also acoustic protection.
So far, Izzy has managed to identify 14 different types of animals in the seagrass habitats off the coast of Scotland, not including dolphins, which can be occasionally heard, but only from a distance. So how do these marine animals and these marine creatures that you're mentioning actually produce sound?
They can make it in a whole variety of ways. Fish have evolved sound production multiple times. Two of the main methods they use are firstly their swim bladder. So that's the gas sac they have, which they use to regulate their buoyancy. But they can also squeeze it or hit it like a drum, and that can make all sorts of different noises. The other main method they use is rubbing their bones or teeth together. So one of the most common is moving their shoulder girdle. So it's a bit like you clicking your shoulder, which I think is quite cool. And crabs also use a variety of methods. They could rub parts of their body together, or they can hit the hard substrate that they're standing on.
And Izzy is capturing it all on tape.
So I take these microphones and I put them on a stand about 30 centimetres above the seabed. I leave them down for a week, and then every day I'll go and put a camera next to them so I can match up the sound and the video if possible.
You can work out what's making their sound.
Well, the absolute dream would be to have a fish swims in front of the camera, you see it kind of moving, it looks like it could be making sound, and you can associate that with the sound you're actually hearing in the sound recording.
Unfortunately, that's not quite the reality.
This is the catch with acoustic data, is that it can be really easy to quickly collect thousands of hours of audio if you want, but then it's not so straightforward to analyse that data. Hopefully in the future it will be, but not quite yet.
Izzy has spent many months wading through the audio recordings she has collected so far.
I use two main methods of analysing the data. The first is called acoustic indices, which are statistics that summarise the complexity of the soundscape.
This method might be quick, but the downside is that acoustic indices capture the sounds of waves and boats as well as animal sounds.
The second method I use is phonic richness, where I just take samples of my audio and I listen to them and I look at visual depictions of the sound with something called a spectrogram. And I actually go and count how many different types of animal sounds I think I can detect and group them into types. That's very time consuming, but you're actually pulling out real data that you are pretty sure links to animal sounds.
And there's another significant benefit to this method.
That is what can be used in future to train machine learning algorithms so we can get this analysis working more smoothly.
The ultimate goal of Izzy's research is not just to track what's happening at her three field sites, but to contribute to a sound library that can one day be used to train a machine learning model, a form of artificial intelligence that can analyse other sites as well. But that's at least a few years away. Studies show that globally 29% of seagrass has been lost since the 18th century, and this decline has accelerated in recent years. So I wonder how these soundscapes can help us learn about how these habitats work.
Humans are just such visual creatures that it's really easy to forget about sound. We all know that birds sing and frogs croak and bees buzz and things. That's kind of natural to us. But I think it's very much not in people's minds that fish and crabs and shrimp make noises and need sound to survive and communicate.
While Izzy hopes eventually to use machine learning to analyse her data and broaden the scope of her research, it turns out artificial intelligence still has a lot to learn about marine life.
A few months ago, I asked ChatGPT some kind of question about fish sounds, and it actually came back at me saying that fish are silent, which was pretty crazy. So that just shows that general awareness has a lot of catching up to do.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Izzy. That was really fascinating. And I feel like next time I go swimming, I'm going to try and listen in a bit differently to what's happening in the seagrass.
That's great. Well, you have to let me know what you hear. I'd love to know.
Yes. And good luck with all of your research. Thank you so
much. Thank you so much. It's been great to talk to you.
This is such a fun story, Anna, and what a great conversation you've had with Izzy. It sounds like this is something big in the way we understand the sea and the marine environment as well.
Absolutely. And there's so much that we don't yet know about sound underwater and acoustic pollution and all of the things that are going on right now. I really think Izzy is among a sort of group of scientists who are laying the groundwork for understanding so much more about how we can help protect our seas and how we can help conserve marine wildlife as well. So, for example, like while the photosynthesis popping might be a bit of a distraction for her work, and there are other scientists studying that in greater detail, it's linking all of those sounds and being able to decipher them and then judging how that correlates to different seagrass habitats that's really fascinating.
And what else could be done with this kind of research?
There's so much untapped potential, honestly. Once scientists start creating these really rich sound libraries, that can be done all around the world in different types of habitats, in different marine environments. Then you've got this AI factor as well. So being able to analyze really quickly what the baselines are, what's changing, how things are progressing or declining perhaps. And another future project Izzy and her team are considering getting involved with one day is to perhaps even play the sound of a thriving seagrass habitat in an early growth stage seabed to potentially attract more animals into that area and accelerate that healthy ecosystem. I think there's a lot of scope for potential future research projects.
Brilliant. Well, thanks so much, Anna, for bringing us this story. It's been great chatting with you.
Thanks so much.
That's it for today's show. In our show notes, you'll find a link to an article that Izzy has written about her research on The Conversation. We want to thank Izzy for sharing some of her original sound recordings with this episode, and to fishsounds.net for the use of some of their fish clips. You can find the citations for those on our website. This episode was written and produced by Katie Flood, with production assistance from Mend Marawani. Sound design was by Eloise Stevens, and our theme music is by Nita Saar. Stephen Kahn is our global executive editor, and I'm Gemma Ware, the show's executive producer. You can connect with us on Instagram at theconversation.com or email us directly at podcast@theconversation.com. Do also sign up for The Conversation's free daily newsletter by clicking on the link in our show notes. If you like what we do, please support our podcast and The Conversation more broadly by going to donate.theconversation.com. And please rate and review the show wherever you listen. It really helps us reach a wider audience and spread academic knowledge that little bit further. Thanks very much for listening.